And welcome to All About Symbian, Insight number 38. Ewan's off gallivanting round Scotland again, so it's just Rafe and myself. Say hello, Rafe.
Hi, everybody.
There we go. Quite a few bits of short news, and then we'll have a bit of meat on a couple of flagship devices that have landed on our desks 2 days ago. But first of all, some news. Let's start off with the N96. It's shipping now, Rafe, is that right?
Yes, Nokia did a press release, I think it was on Wednesday, announcing that this device was now shipping. What that actually means is it's left the sort of factory warehouse, so for most people it won't be in the shops for another couple of weeks, and it'll be even longer before it becomes available on operators. But for example, I know that people who ordered the N96 Special Edition through the Face the Task website have started getting them. And it's now just a matter of weeks rather than months. So people can start getting their hands on the N96 should they wish to.
Yeah, I'd be interested in your thoughts, Rafe, on exactly how the N96 is going to fit into the marketplace. Obviously, we'll go into more depth on the site, and you already have done in your preview. But there's a lot of groundswell around the net saying that the N96 is perhaps a tiny bit late, really, given that the N85 has already been released, and that seems to do most of the things and some things better for less money. What are your thoughts? Who's the N96 really going to sell to?
Well, I mean, I can see the argument completely behind this, and on one level I do think there's something to it, in that I would say the N85, and indeed maybe even the N79, or staying with the N95 8GB, is better value overall than the N96, but I think it's important to remember the N96 still has the most memory. It still has a bigger screen than the N85 anyway, and it also adds in a DVB-H receiver for mobile TV. Now, a lot of countries don't have that, and it's not really taken off, but for some people, for example, in Italy, where DVB-H is relatively popular and, you know, it's quite widely available, that could be an important factor. But I also think you can't necessarily underestimate how people like to own what they regard as the top model. I mean, it's the highest model number, and there's a certain exclusivity about it. So I still think we'll see people like that wanting to own it. But also, if you know you want a phone that's focused around the sort of TV and video experience, for my money, the N96 is the one to get, because it's optimized in terms of the chipset for video playback. There's hardware decoding for the H.264 codec, which means the battery life will be much better, despite the fact it has actually got a smaller battery than the N85, and people have been very critical of that, and actually we have to wait and see, and I actually think it's not going to be as bad as people think. Now, obviously there is an issue with getting video onto the device, but I wouldn't be too surprised if we see video services come along that enable you to get video onto the N96 before too long, either from operators or from Nokia. Indeed, Nokia is shipping the N96 with several feature phones sort of pre-installed in the device, and the film you get will depend on the market you're in. So I do think it has a place, but I do think it's a niche device, and in that sense, you know, it never really was a replacement for the N95, which people sort of thought it was. I mean, I said in our original preview it was really a video and TV focused version of the N95, and I would still really stand by that summarization. So if you're looking at mainstream, yes, you know, it's going to be like the Nokia N93, you know, for people who want it, they'll want it, but it's not a mass market, I would say, in the same way that maybe devices like the N85 and N79 will be. But I'd be curious to hear what you think, Steve.
Yeah, I think you're right. Nokia are perhaps a tiny bit unlucky when it comes to their anything with mobile TV, and they had the N92, you may remember, a couple of years ago, then the N77, and both of which were actually released, I believe, in some countries around the world where there was the appropriate TV transmission signals. Maybe the N96 will go the same way, maybe not. I have to say it's not really appealing to me, the sheer size of the N96, the fact that it's quite a bit wider and bigger than things, even than the N95 8GB, somewhat puts me off. You'll hear later on, anybody listening to this, that we're going to be talking about the Samsung i8510, aka the Innovate, which in many ways is a dead-on competitor to both the N95 8GB and the N96, so I think that will be a bit of a battle royal. And I have to say, the 8510 from Samsung is narrower and thinner and has longer battery life, so I think that's going to be, unless you actually want the TV reception facilities, I think the Innovate has the potential to be the better device. But we'll come to that in a moment. Let's just wrap on with some more news quickly, Rafe. N95 classic firmware. I'll deal with this one. the also for the N95 8GB, we expect to have the same V30 firmware by the time people actually hear this. And just reading down the list here off the news story, there's the Share Online, Engage, Maps 2.0. All these things, there used to be a frustration that you'd have a new N95 Classic and people would, we'd have to say, oh no, you need to update the firmware. Oh no, you need to go online to download, grab Share Online, you need to grab Nokia Maps. And the geeks would know what to grab, but other people wouldn't. Now to have N95 Classics presumably still being sold out there and being shipped with V30 and the firmware, and certainly just be able to tell your friends, hey look, forget all the little download links I used to send you and the URL, just upgrade it to V30 and you'll have most of this stuff built in. Then the fact that there's even more RAM free after booting, they've optimized that again. And there's of course more free space on your C disk because you'll have to install all these extras. So there's many, many benefits, and it's a must have download. They still haven't got this user data preservation that we've been talking about for a while now, so you will have to go through the whole hassle of reinstalling any other third-party apps you've got and seeking your data. But to be honest, with more and more stuff coming the ROM these days, there's less and less you have to put back after a reflash. So, yes, a thumbs up from me. You've installed it on your N95, Rafe?
Yes, I've installed it as well. Also brings automatic screen rotation. But as you say, the main benefits of you can update everything in one go. It's on the ROM. Actually, the Engage client's on the C drive, so you won't save space there. But it's well worth doing, and there's a number of stability and bug fixes as well, I imagine. So, yes, you know, it's good to see Nokia continuing to update a device, which is now, after all, sort of 18 months since it first became available, but it's probably just a reflection of how successful it's been.
Yeah, I do get the feeling that they prioritise firmware updates directly according to device sales. You know, with people like, I've been complaining about the N93 being ignored for ages, as have many other people, and there are some other devices in their portfolio which appear to be being ignored, but
it's just good business. I mean, because it's going to benefit the maximum number of people, and you know, people have to realise these firmware updates do take considerable amount of time and effort on Nokia's part. It's not just necessarily one device; it's all the variants as well on various operators or in various countries, and they have to test all of that. And there's a considerable financial sort of fee involved in that, and so for some devices it really just isn't worth their while, and it may be frustrating, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And the N95, as we know, has sold in its millions, if not tens of millions, so I can quite understand why they're prioritizing those updates. The N82's had some pretty good updates in the last year or so. I think there's probably still one more equivalent N-Gage and Share Online update for that about to happen as well, but we haven't got any hard concrete information on that. Watch this space. More news comes with music. There's October the 2nd. What's that about, Rafe?
Okay, so what this was last week Nokia and Carphone Warehouse between them released a press release saying that comes with music, which is the service by which you'll buy a phone and a year's worth of free downloads of music, or if you like, a year's subscription to unlimited music downloads will come with it, would be made available first in the UK exclusively for prepay handsets. This is in the Carphone Warehouse in the form of the S Series 40 based 5310. And this is kind of a pre-announcement. They said more information is going to be coming along on October the 2nd. Now, we're pretty sure that this comes with music will also be available on other handsets, maybe not immediately, but certainly in due course. So October the 2nd will be an interesting date to watch, because I think there may be a number of announcements that will interest people around that date. And I, for one, believe that comes with music is probably going to be one of the most significant service-related announcements that Nokia has ever made, and it's going to have a very big impact on the music industry. Now, I do expect Apple to sort of follow suit, maybe even in its next iPod event, which I believe is coming up next Monday on September the 9th or so. But, you know, comes with music. Being able to have a music subscription which allows unlimited downloads is really going to revolutionise the way people buy music. So that's why I really wanted to flag it up in this podcast.
Do you think there'll be any new hardware October the 2nd?
I think it's eminently possible, but there's, of course, are no guarantees. It would, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if we see some Series 40 related music-focused handsets, and it's entirely possible that we might see something S60 related as well.
without wishing to say any more.
Other
very brief news, which you can read on the site. Symbian have released their quarter two results, which all the business as usual, lots of new devices in development, etc., etc. But Nokia 5320 now has N-Gage client. I'm expecting several other handsets to have N-Gage as well as they roll out the feature pack to compatibility, etc., etc. These availability and compatibility lists do change all the time. You have to kind of watch all about Symbian and also watch the N-Gage site. Now, for the meat and drink of this podcast, Samsung very kindly have loaned us a couple of i8510s, aka the Innovate. We had a hands-on a month ago, you may remember, a very brief couple of hours with it at Samsung's HQ in the UK. But we've actually got devices to hang on to and to test in depth. And as I have been doing. Rafe, do you want to go first? What are your first impressions of this device?
Well, I've been very impressed by this device. On the one hand, just looking at the specs, you know, with the 16 gigabytes of internal flash memory, although I would add that there's actually also an 8 gigabyte variant, and that's being sold in the UK via Carphone Warehouse at the moment, which I believe is the first place it's become available. The 8 megapixel camera is probably the standout feature for me. It's got a new sensor inside it that steps up from the 5 megapixel cameras we've seen before. And I think I could fairly say it's probably the best camera phone I've ever used. Some of the other 8 megapixel on the market probably get quite close to it. I'm thinking of the Sony Ericsson and the LG ones. But this is the only smartphone with an 8 megapixel camera. I've sort of been testing it a little bit. I need probably some more time with it, and I know Steve's got some comment he'll come back to. Samsung have also impressed me by including a pretty good software bundle with the device in addition to all the usual S60 stuff. It doesn't have some of the Nokia S60 stuff, so I'm thinking things here like sports tracker, podcasting, video center. However, it does have a number of third-party bits of software included in this. Is Fring, Route 66, or rather a Samsung-branded version of that, and a number of other software titles, including a couple of games, Shouzu, and they've also been developing them software themselves, much like Nokia do. And there's, for example, there's a I would call it an enhanced to-do list on the phone. So I was pretty impressed by the software bundle on this, especially when you compare it to some of the earlier Samsung devices. The design, I'm not sure how much I like this sort of Samsung style. It is very well put together, so the build quality is pretty good. It's maybe just a bit too, you know, techno feeling for me. Maybe that's a bit unfair, but you know, such things are, of course, very subjective. I'll be interested, what were your immediate reactions to the design, Steve?
Well, as you know from the hands-on a month ago, it feels very slick in the hand. It is actually a 2 or 3 millimeters thinner than the N95 8GB, which is perhaps its closest competitor, certainly that I've had hands-on time with. And it's also more rounded, so it really, to have exactly the same or better functionality from the N95 8GB previously, quote, the best smartphone in the world, copyright Steve Litchfield, to have it directly competing for that and beating it in a thinner, sleeker form factor had to be a positive.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I should really be comparing like with like.
Yeah, there's the plus points over the N95 8GB, really, apart from the sizing, that it supports USB charging. USB connections are also high speed, and the N95 8GB is notoriously slow. Anything to do with the mass memory, it just grinds to a halt. This is full, whatever it is, 7 or 8 megabytes per second transfers. It's also got the 16GB build flash memory and the micro SD card slot, and of course the huge unique selling point, which is the 8 megapixel stills camera with all the extra fancy modes and the initial focus in video recording mode, which is also VGA, 30 frames a second. So on paper, this is a stunning device. And the two major points to make, which I shall make in text as well, but it's well worth making here. One is that these things take time to finish. The N95 8GB and the N95 from Nokia, when they first came out, in both cases, Rafe and I had late prototypes or early production hardware. And in both cases, it took at least 2 or 3 months minimum and 2 or 3 firmware updates for the thing to stabilize and all the niggles and problems to be eliminated. You could even argue in the N95 Classics case it's taken a year and a half, depending on how you judge the different firmware revisions it's had. So these things take time to finish. These are very complex devices under the hood. They have all sorts of extra tweaks in terms of graphics accelerators and DSP audio chips and GPS, Wi-Fi, UPnP, all these things. And every device seems to be slightly different, and which means that there'll be different niggles to fix. At the moment, the i5-10's software, I would say, is in the same state as the N95's was when it's first released. It's just about usable, and just a person using it for basic taking photos and making phone calls won't notice any problems. If you try and push the envelope, as Rafe and I have been are trying to do for the review, you'll immediately start getting problems. And I've got a list of about 20 niggles on a piece of paper next to me, which I'll put up in the preview, which you'll see on the site. So there's that. There's the second factor which I want to highlight, is the fact that they've used a screen technology. As far as I can tell, it's similar to that Nokia used in their ill-fated N93i, where they ramped up the color contrast and definition and number of colors for indoor viewing. So the screen looks stunning indoors, but unfortunately, take it outdoors, certainly in direct sunlight, the screen becomes something of a mirror. It's just about usable for photography, because you know what you're shooting, because you're pointing the camera at the blessed thing, or the person, or the subject. So that's not such an issue. But if you want to actually start using it as a smartphone outdoors, if you're out and about with the family trying to check an email or look something up, then the screen is really quite hard to read, certainly in comparison to the N95 8GB. Rafe, what did you find in terms of screen contrast?
Yes, I definitely noticed a difference, although I have to admit I didn't have the same problem as Steve did, perhaps because I wasn't using it in bright sunlight, because it's been raining most of the week here. The odd bits of sunshine, there's definitely a noticeable difference. But I've been using sort of something like the N78 and some of the other phones, which perhaps aren't quite as good as the N95 8GB screen. Now, my personal theory on this is, as far as I know, the N95 8GB, one of the reasons its screen is so brilliant is it actually uses it's transreflective, which basically means it's smart in the way it reflects light, whereas I suspect the i8-510 or the Innovate, in common with the N93, doesn't have that in it. And while the transreflective coating does dull it slightly inside, it helps enormously outside. It's sort of, I'm not quite sure of the details. I imagine it's something to do with polarizing light. But it's certainly, there is a difference. I think the point to make here is it really depends on where you're using it and how much this bothers you. Now, for some people, if Steve and I had this conversation, he says, you know, I go outside and take photographs when it's bright and when I can get the best possible picture. And I think then you know, and professional photographers would take that kind of model, and then you definitely will notice it. I tend to sort of take a photograph when I want to take a photograph of something to remember it, and you know, the light conditions are pretty irrelevant as far as I'm concerned. And then I think you'll probably notice it less. So it does depend on how you use your device, and you'll probably know that from your current pattern of usage. And one thing I have noticed about the i8-510's camera, because the sensor is bigger than in previous models, I think the performance in low light conditions is actually superior when you're not using the flash. However, I think you've been using the flash as well, Steve, and you sort of made a comparison with the N95 8GB, didn't you, with that?
Yeah, I have to say that although I agree that the overall camera performance is pretty stunning in terms of sensitivity and resolution, and of course there's billions of things to fiddle with, once you've adjusted the settings, I'm just really, really impressed by some of the photos, and I'll put some examples up on the site. But the flash performance was a tiny bit weak. It made me look, given that I've just been testing the Samsung G810, which is in some ways the predecessor to this model, that has 5 megapixel or S60 third edition feature pack 1, but it had the Xenon flash, and I have to say the i8-8510 with a Xenon flash I think would have just been the icing on the cake. So they said the LED flash was weaker than the Nokia's, which was a bit of a disappointment.
Yeah, but as I say, I think the sensor means it works better when you're not taking a flash. So in sort of typical indoor conditions where you've maybe got, you know, fluorescent light around, but not necessarily bright sunlight. I mean, I've always found the very best photos from the sort of N-series devices tend to come out, you get them when you're outside in reasonably bright conditions, and sometimes it can underperform inside. And I think perhaps the Innovate will get around some of that. And as Steve mentioned, there's a whole bunch of settings, and this is something that I suspect could frustrate new users. You're actually only going to get the best results when you tweak the settings. For example, both Steve and I sort of agreed with the fact that there was too much edge enhancement, and by toning down the sharpness you could get better picture results, and there was also wide dynamic range switched off by default, which seemed to improve pictures. But again, this kind of picture quality, again, is something a little bit in the eye of the beholder, you know, how exactly you like your photos enhanced, you know, whether you prefer Kodak colours versus realistic colours. I think overall we could say that the camera is definitely better. And of course, you know, one of the big things here is that with an 8 megapixel camera, you've got that many more pixels to play with. So when you're downsizing it, you tend to end up with a much better quality photograph than you would with a 5 megapixel, even if, you know, the difference with the naked eye is quite difficult to pick out. So, you know, you can take a worse photograph, if you like, downsize it and get a better result overall. But we are talking relatively marginal improvements. This isn't like the step up between an autofocus camera and a non-autofocus camera. It goes both ways, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, to just go back to that thing about 8 megapixel versus 5, it is a slight step up in terms of resolution, but to demonstrate the importance of high resolution and what you can do. My daughter asked me this morning for a photograph of her hamster. Now, I happen to have one on my wall, which I'd taken with the N95 at 5 megapixels, and the hamster was in about 1/9 of the photo. Most of it was a photo of her, photographing my daughter, of course. But I was able, because the resolution was so high, I was able to simply crop out the hamster, print that at 6x4, and it looked fine. And you just couldn't have done that with a 2 megapixel. It will come out as a massive, you know, in large blocks. So certainly with an 8 megapixel image, even if you're not going to use it for fabulous semi-professional shots blown out to poster size, just the flexibility of being able to crop and as Ray said, sample down, there's all sorts of possibilities. And if you're taking something that you really quite arty, I think you'd be able to do a lot more with it. And certainly with these extra settings, be able to fiddle with the ISO sensitivity and the sharpness and the wide dynamic range and color saturation, things like that. For somebody trying to take, you know, a sunset or a flower or something that really makes you feel good and makes you feel like you've created something, I think there's a lot of flexibility there for fiddling around. It's worth also mentioning the video recording on this. It's not quite as slick as on the N95 8GB. I don't think the picture quality is quite there yet, and the audio quality isn't quite there. And there are also lip sync problems, but these are just symptomatic of early firmware. We saw the same on the Samsung i550, was it, Rafe?
That's
the,
right.
The candy bar. And that had appalling sound quality on the video recording when it was first introduced. And they obviously changed the codec or changed the bitrate, and it was much, much better with the new firmware. So this being feature pack 2, I'll have over-the-air updates. So we're very much hoping that all the niggles we've seen so far are going to be fixed over the next weeks and months. Rafe?
Yes, well, just to go back to what you were saying about video, it does have its plus sides. For example, there's a dedicated microphone, which is actually pointing the right way. And again, this is one of those interesting ones where if you play it back on the phone, you have absolutely no problems playing it back in RealPlayer, although the same cannot be said of the video editing software. So if you typically watch your videos that you take on your phone just on your phone, or maybe use the TV out cable to put them onto TV, then, you know, that's going to be absolutely fine. If you're the sort of person who takes it off your phone and does large-scale editing with it, you will find it frustrating. There's clearly some interesting things going on in the codecs because, for example, you couldn't open the produced video in QuickTime, although it did seem to work fine for me in Windows Media Player. So, you know, whether you see some of the problems that we've been talking about will depend on how you use your phone. And I suspect that both Steve and I are probably at the upper end in terms of pushing the device to its limits. But of course, you know, we would like to see these things fixed. And as Steve says, there's a pretty good chance that we'll in due course see over-the-air firmware updates. I suspect it may be a little longer than a few weeks because Samsung is still new at this. But I'm pretty sure that they are going to work on that. And it's definitely something they're going to consider both for this and indeed for future devices.
Yeah, there's great potential there. The fact that you can get the initial focus in video mode is the best compromise between what the N93i tried to do in its prototype stage, which was constant video autofocus, in which case it would just keep was cycling between focusing, out of focus, focus, just out of focus, and it was just a mess, and you had the noise of the mechanism. Here we've got just you set an initial focus if you want it, takes all of a second, and then you're focused on your subject and you can shoot video of them, even if they're only, I know, half a meter away, which I think will be a great improvement on what most of the N series devices do. But as I said, they do have to fix the codec problems and sound quality. It's also worth mentioning, talking about sound, that the music quality from the i8510 has really impressed both of us. It's got the same dedicated DSP chip as the i450, which we reviewed a couple of months back. But basically hardware music generation. And this also comes with a load of hardware equalizer settings, all of which actually make a difference. Normally on these equalizer things, certainly in software, on most phones, you change the equalizer setting and it doesn't sound that different. Here, that makes a dramatic difference, and the sound quality was reasonably loud and very, very high quality. We tried it on several different types of headphones, and we're blown away. I think it wouldn't be too much of an understatement. So this has certainly got scope for being a very good media player.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's got amongst the best music quality that I've heard on a phone. And, you know, obviously it's got the 3.5mm audio jack, so you can plug in whatever you like. But even the in-box headset is pretty good as well. And, of course, there's support for Bluetooth as well. And I tried it out with that and actually got the best-sounding music I ever have out of a stereo Bluetooth headset. So I was impressed by that as well.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think that more or less wraps it up for this podcast. You'll doubtless be hearing quite a bit more about the i8510 in the coming months as things get fixed. And as we try out the different capabilities, obviously the N96 is going to arrive fairly shortly, as hopefully will the N79 and N85 production versions. We're still angling for that LG QWERTY clamshell whose name escapes me, right? Is that the 610?
Yes, the KT610. We're still trying to get some of those in, as indeed the Sony Ericsson G700 and G900. But watch this space, because I'm sure we'll be getting some of this. So we thought we had a busy period sort of mid-summer with all the things like the N76 and the 6210, 6220 coming out. But I think we're going to have an even busier period in sort of October, November, December. And it's looking like a pretty good time to be looking. If you're looking to upgrade your handset for the Christmas time, there's going to be an awful lot of choice, and we'll be doing our very best to offer you some insight into what may suit you best.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we'll catch you next time on the All About Symbian Insight. Bye.